Thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. You might remember a few months ago, we had Richard Allen Jr., the son of the great major leaguer Dick Allen, on the show, and we were talking about trying to get him into the Hall of Fame posthumously through the Veterans Committee elections. We also had an author who wrote a book about him, and justice was served. He is now in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And there's also a brand new film which made its debut at the Boston Film Festival called My Father, Dick Allen, Waiting for the Call, Justice Served, with a plaque for number 15. And Richard Allen Jr. is with us once again. Richard, welcome to the show. And obviously, you would love it if your dad could have seen this himself, but what does this mean to you? What does it mean to the family that this justice is finally served?
Well, hi. First of all, thanks for having me. It's great to be on and to speak about this. It feels good. It's a relief. I mean, it's the family has been questioning me and waiting for this time to happen, and it's here, and I'm just so happy that I don't have to keep trying to answer questions about when's the next vote going to be and everything like that. So things are good now.
It's hard every year that goes by. More and more people, pass away, or they forget about him, or he becomes less relevant. And I guess that's the danger as the years went by, right?
It is, and I have to admit, I got to the point to where I felt like, you know, it's a whole new generation, obviously, and I his on-field play visually, if you don't get to see that or, you know, to experience it, you really don't know, and all of the writers that actually watched him play, everyone has moved on. I mean, my uncle is the only sibling he has left is the baby, and people will forget, and the numbers change, from different eras, so his numbers might not look as great as some that have played in, like the AstroTurf days and things like that.
I remember the first year I started playing Little League when I was 7 was 1972, and it was all about the Oakland A's, and I'm an Oakland guy, and it was great that we won 3 World Series in a row, but I do remember the first time I understood what an MVP was, and it was your dad for the White Sox. And so what does this mean to, the teams that he played for, that they have another Hall of Famer in there?
I think it's great. I mean, I know a lot of Chicago fans really wanted him to go in as a White Sox because of that 72 season. Obviously, the Phillies are they're excited that they have another Hall of Famer going in as a Philly. But that 72 season, and you being an Oakland fan, that was his challenge. I mean, they were trying to catch you guys in the worst way. But I mean, that was a year. That was a very strong Oakland team, and I can still hear Chuck Tanner telling my father, "We almost had him. They heard us coming."
Yeah, that was. I mean, 5 division titles in a row from 71 to 75. That was 3 World Series in the middle. This film now, and it was obviously a different time, and the film goes down to Little Rock when he was in the minors, and not very easy for an African-American pro athlete at that time, to say the least, right?
Oh, my goodness. Not at all. I know I took a tour with Fergie Jenkins, teammate, and we went through, because it was during that time, obviously, with the Little Rock Nine and having the military, escorting 9 students into schools, trying to integrate. He was down there in the thick of that. I mean, it was really, really, I can't imagine. I told him, I said, I don't even know how you did that one. That was a rough one there.
So, it's also, your dad was a hero to a guy that I knew because he wore glasses. And the thing was, there were no Rec Specs Oakleys. I mean, he was wearing these like wiry glasses that your doctor would wear. I mean, that probably was not easy for him.
No, it's funny you should say that because he never wore glasses playing sports. And like in Little Rock, he's like, the lighting, you know, was dark, and a ball was hit to him, and it went right by him, and he's like, he didn't see it, and he told him, okay, I'll wear the glasses, and because he couldn't see it, and I guess that was the history of it. After that, he wasn't able to pick up the a ball with dim lights on the minor league field, and it stuck. He hated playing in them, but, you know, he had no choice.
Well, the thing also about your dad was he didn't hit these pop fly home runs that snuck over the wall at Fenway. I mean, the guy, nowadays we, of course, have radar or jugs guns, whatever, and we can say, oh, that was 108 off the bat. I can only imagine your dad, they'd probably be like 120, 125. I mean, he hit the ball hard.
Oh, my gosh. Over the weekend, I was visiting my cousin at the University of Illinois, and I got to go to the baseball facility, and just like you said, you know, they have all this computer technology with the exit velocity, and, you know, and like you said, I on my flight back, I'm thinking, I wonder what his exit velocity would have been. I mean, you know, you get a hold of one, and like you said, they weren't just getting over the fence, you know, they were instant home runs. And in his words, he was like, yeah, there's no check swings here. He was coming with the whole K-55 barrel crashing down. You know, he did. He'd say, I'm not afraid to put that bat back in the rack.
Right. And I know he very briefly played for the A's and then kind of abruptly left after a doubleheader, and I know we talked about that last time, but why do you think a guy that good bounced around so much? I mean, Phil's four or five years, Cardinals for a year, Dodgers for a year, like 3 years with the White Sox, couple years with the Phil's. This guy's a seven-time All-Star, Rookie of the Year, an AL MVP. Why do you think that he was had that kind of vagabond lifestyle?
That's a great question, and I'm actually going to give you his answer.
Okay.
He and I sat around, and he would just talk about it, and his answer was, you know, I was always chasing a championship, and I was always looked at as the guy to be that final piece to get everyone there. And something always happened. He's like, I just, like with the Oakland, he said, we just get beat at the wire. You know, everything, the 64 Phillies, they go on the collapse. Well, he wasn't the piece. Well, maybe he was, because they brought him up from Little Rock to be the... He always felt that he was the player that was going to get a team that was right on the brink over the edge, or over the top, I should say. And those are his words. He felt that, you know, it just never worked out for him. You know?
So your dad also was the highest paid player in baseball. At one point, and what he makes a year is about, I think it's below minimum wage now. Did he ever live high on the hog? Because I know, like I'll give you an example. Willie May still has the same house out here. Well, he didn't until he died. His wife May still lives there. But, you know, he never was behind a gated community and drove Rolls Royces. And more power to people who do want to do that. But your dad more humble?
Oh, my goodness. He's born and raised small town Wampum, Pennsylvania. The house he left home for, he had built for his mother, is still there. Obviously, that's where he passed. But, I mean, everyone knows his love for horses. I mean, he had the money to do certain things and buy things. But, you know, he was very humble to where he would sleep in barns. I mean, like in bunkhouses. He always wanted to be a jockey. And so you might find him renting rooms on the racetrack, like he was. Serious. That's his true story. I mean, he never saw the need for the glamour. And
so,
it's funny you say that, because I look at pictures, and he's always hiding in the back when he was growing up, or, you know, away from the camera.
So I've only been to the Hall of Fame once. I was lucky to go. It was in December, and it was snowing. So What was it like? July, a sunny day, and you know, on the stage, and to see the plaque. I mean, how? I'm sure one of the greatest days of your life. But what can you encapsulate that day?
Yes, I mean, I got an early visit. I think it was early April or something like that. And it, you know, the people there, they were telling me, "Trust me, it's not going to look like this in July. Everything is going to be different." And, oh my gosh, the view over the lake. Everything was different. The people, hearing them, you know, chanting his name. It just, I think the one that got me was the parade, and I really wasn't sure. I didn't know I was going to be in the parade, but then we turned the corner, and they're chanting that the last name, and some guy just yells out, "It's about damn time." I mean, that was the highlight. That was the highlight for me, and that was really special. That was really big.
Before we let you go,
it really was.
That's awesome. Before we let you go, talking about the film at the Boston Film Festival, my father, Dick Allen, waiting for the call just to serve with a plaque for number 15. What's some of the feedback you got from viewers on this movie?
They're excited that something like this is going to come out and happen, and it was a great idea. Dr. Fletcher felt like it was going to be a great idea to capture all of the emotions and, you know, the ups and downs of going from 2014 up till 2025. And but people are waiting. They're waiting to see what it all looks like and as it's coming together. And I get a little trailer sent to me every now and then to see, you know, how it's going. And I think it's going to be good.
People should check out Boston Film Festival, and this will get the wider release in 2026. We've been speaking with Richard Allen Jr. Richard, congrats, man. Glad it all worked out, and have fun with the doc.
Thank you so much. Thanks
all right.
Again.